animals want more than we eat.
Where are we from?
Life is rooted in Death's Republic.
Where are we going?
Our seat returns to Death's Republic. These cheery sentiments should inspire.
Okay, so welcome back to the fifth episode of the Grey Matters podcast series. I really hope you've been enjoying the episodes so far. Today we're going to be looking at Lanark and the City, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Lisa Lefebvre. Lisa is a curator, writer, editor, and the inaugural executive director of the Holt Smithson Foundation. So Lisa, lovely to see you. Thank you for joining me here today.
It's all my pleasure. To think about Lanark is something, well, I mean, really, what could be better than doing that?
Oh, well, good. Thank you. Well, let's kick off, first of all, with maybe your first experience of reading the novel then. You know, when did you first read it? Maybe set the scene a little bit about what you were doing at the time and what impact it had on you also.
You know, it's a really good question, and I'm not going to be able to answer it very well because I can't remember when I first started reading it. I've got the feeling, but this could be completely wrong, that I first started reading it when I was studying architecture, and I was a terrible architecture student, really, really awful. I didn't have the wit to be able to create buildings, but I became very interested in the city. And in my misty memory of Lanark, is it was one of these books that I had for a long time. And I don't know about you, but there's certain books in my life that I've read and they've taken me a long time to read. So Thomas Pynchon's Mason and Dixon is one, and so is Lanark. And I remember struggling with reading it, but wanting to read it. And then I remember with such clarity the moment when I hit the stride of the narrative with all of its winding paths, and I could not stop reading the book. But what's really interesting is this species of books, they always stay with me. And I can remember with such precision certain passages in the book. And in fact, before our conversation this morning, I picked up Lanark from my bookshelf. And in fact, I seem to have three copies of Lanark, which also happens quite often when I really love a book. And I was flicking through it and everything was so familiar. It didn't matter where I opened the book. So for me, I guess my memory of reading the book in a way echoes the structure of the book itself, that it's in and out of imagination and experience. And what I do know is that one of the wonderful things of having more years behind you is that I know this is a book that has really informed the way I think about urban spaces and all urban spaces. And I think that's the brilliance of great writing, is it might start with the personal, it might start with something incredibly specific, but then it rolls out like a long tongue to speak to all other urban places.
Can you talk a little bit more about that then? What was it in particular about the urban spaces? I mean, obviously you're saying that it was hard to kind of get into it. I know other people have mentioned that, and I wonder if, you know, the format, the playing around with, it's not in the kind of chronological order of the books and the sequencing, but this, these sort of dual worlds which seem separate but are together, you know, can you talk a little bit maybe about that and these sort of spaces that he created, I guess, in sort of real biographical sections and maybe sort of unthank otherworldly sections?
Well, I think for me, that's why the book was a struggle to read, and that's why it's so brilliant. And one of the things that I think Lanark shows us is so-called realism, mirror realism or photocopy realism, however you want to talk about it, is less real than something that weaves together different understandings. So the truth is, and I think this happens for everyone, I don't think this just happens for me, is the way that we experience places. So let's think about the way that we experience cities. It's not just about what you see, what you smell, what you hear, what you perceive. It's about how that interlocks with your own memory, with your own narratives. And what I really love about urban space, and this only seems to happen for me in urban space, is some days you have this crystal clear precision of perception. And you can see a city as if it's a geology of different lives that have been lived. And I think with Lanark, it's a book that is a biography of a person, a biography of a city, a biography of social class, a biography of language, a biography of architecture. And it's not that we're hearing one person's story, we're hearing all these different layers. And maybe that's why it feels so applicable to other spaces. And I suppose I haven't thought about this before, but I suppose when I reflect on Lanark, it reminds me of the way that I see cities. Mm-hmm. So earlier this morning, I'm talking to you from London. I left my flat. I went out to the shops to get some coffee and some milk, the classic morning thing to do. And of course, when I'm walking around and I'm seeing and layering up experiences. I'm walking around a part of a city that I know very well, that I've lived for 25 years. And it all builds up experience. And it might be a street corner with a tree on it that's completely past remarkable. But it means something when you consider the lived experience. And when I think about Lanark, that's what it's doing. It's that lived experience. And then I suppose the other thing is that, and I know this contradicts what I just said, but for me, this book really conjures up the specifics of Glasgow as well. So I feel that I can see, as a non-Glasgow person, I can see those cobbled streets that are in between buildings. And that's what's so great, isn't it? When you go to a city that isn't yours, is you notice things. And I can't think of many places that has those very, very particular alleyways. And they feel like alleyways of adventure. And I always have those sights in my mind when I think about Lanark.
Which is interesting to pick up on, because I guess for many people, that reimagining of Glasgow really happened with Lanark. So before that, even though, as you're saying, those lived experiences and that city was there, still there, and people were still existing within it, it's because no one had, I guess, imagined it and brought it to life within a work of fiction like that. So it's interesting for you to experience Glasgow through the book and then to come to it, and how, yeah, this reimagining of it. And I think the layering too is something I know Alistair talks about, you know, even within his writing, within his pictures too, how he physically would layer up words when he was writing, so they become almost like maps with, you know, forms moving up and down, and this sort of mapping of the city too, which I think it's really interesting that you've picked up on, that kind of layering that happens, that also appears, I think, within the visual too. I wondered if you, I mean, I know obviously you've presented Alistair's work before in your role as a curator, if there's links between that way of perceiving a city within his words and within his images, and if there's some connection there that you'd like to maybe talk about a bit more.
Yeah, when I think about Alistair's work, I do think about it as a map, and it's a map of a life and a place. And for me, I think I first came across Alistair's work through Lanark, and then I went down a research wormhole to try and find out everything I could. And in fact, to the left-hand side of where you can see me is, I can see them on the top shelf actually, I think every book that's ever been published on or by Alistair Gray, because I just wanted to know everything. And then when I started to see the images and his drawings, I completely fell in love with them. And rather like his writing, with that etched in my memory. There's certain drawings that I can remember every single detail. So I almost feel that I was sitting on the corner of Alexander's bed with his quilt, because that image is, it's my favorite drawing by Alistair. There is this sense of language mapping and language geography. So maybe it's not just mapping, it's more than that. So for me, Alistair is, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, is first and foremost an artist who moves across different media. That could be a mural, it could be talking, it could be drawing, it could be writing, it could be mythologizing. So in a way, and this was one of the reasons why we really wanted to invite him to be a part of the British Art Show, is his work seems so contemporary, contemporary 10 years ago or so, but contemporary now, in that he chose the medium that was right for what he wanted to bring to others. And I really feel that his work is, although it's biographical, although it's expressive, it's not selfish, it's not some kind of self-expression. I really feel that his work is an invitation to think about what's around you and to think about how you actually perceive. As we're talking, I keep on thinking, well, yes, I have a narrative in my head when I'm reading, when I'm thinking. And he almost gives us permission to think our dark thoughts while we're happy and to think our happy thoughts while we're dark.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think about laying that out and exposing it in a sense too, and that idea of not a failure, but it's okay to, as you're saying, to kind of have those high points and those low points too. And I think connecting back to something you said earlier, that idea of using the biographical or something very personal, but in a way allowing that to open up and have these universal conversations and dialogues that I think is so important, and particularly at the time that we're currently in, where life feels quite restricted for many people, to still be able to feel that you can, you know, reach out or communicate, I think is really important too, isn't it? What is there anything you think that you could learn from some of those spaces or places that he created within Lanark, these sort of cities or other environments?
I think there is so much to learn, actually. I think what we can learn from him is to pay attention, to pay attention to what's around you. And maybe this is one of the qualities that we have coming out of the pandemic, because we can't move around much. And you can't do that much, but what you can do is you can walk through where you live and you can pay attention in a way that Alistair teaches us to pay attention. And the pandemic is a horrific time. There's been so many people who've been lost. It has completely underlined the structural inequalities within society in every single location. And it's perhaps taught us to pay attention, to those inequalities, to pay attention to the alleyway beside the pub that you would never think of walking down, to pay attention to the roads that normally there's a ton of traffic zooming down, but just to walk it at 11 o'clock at night. There's this sense, I think, that Alistair teaches us that we can own our cities. We can own them by being in them, by talking about them, by looking, feeling. And when I think about the way that he encourages us to own our cities, it's using all of the senses. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about what you see. There's a number of passages in Lanark where he's talking about the stink, metaphorical and literal stink. And then the sounds as well. And almost the palpable touch of your feet on the ground. So I think we can learn from Lanark that cities are special places. Mm-hmm. They're ugly and they're filthy and they're really quite disgusting. And they're glorious, and they're full of possibilities, and we can invent ourselves, we can invent others, we can dream of a better time and make it happen as well.
Yeah, that seems a really pertinent thing to think about, particularly right now, as you say, most people are living in a restricted way and noticing the beauty or otherness that is around them in the familiar. In things that you know, life has a certain pace to it, doesn't it? That often those details get lost. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to think about and to focus on that you've pulled out there through Lanark and through talking about what a lot of people are going through right now. It's focusing a light on those everyday, making a cup of coffee, the sensory and visual and other, all the different experiences around doing that, and just pausing sometimes, isn't it? Just that ability to pause and to reflect on where you are at that point in time.
And maybe even, I mean, it's something that I think is really chiming with the book, to almost give thanks for city spaces, to have that, take that pleasure from them, because they are there, and in the gloom there's something to look at. Yep. And I think there's nothing in a way in Lanark that is about classical beauty, about an idealistic idea of a golden city. Yet it is a dream city that he's making, a dream city of possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, I mean, interesting to think about now, and artists and makers, writers, and the experience currently, this idea that we're talking about, sort of pausing and taking note of things, or do you think there will be, I mean, it's bound to, right, what the impact will be now of the current situation in terms of making and new ways of looking and thinking that will come out from it?
I think so, and I think at this moment, so this is the end of March 2021, and in fact you might be able to hear it too. I can hear out of my window the school across the street from where I live. It's the first day back today. And I think that there's this moment of hope of being able to, so here in England, from today, you're permitted to spend time with six people outdoors. This is so exciting that you can do such things. And I think what's going to happen for artists now and for perceivers of art is just this joy in looking at art. And also I think this is my crystal ball prediction. I think everyone is hungry to read more books, because we've spent so much time staring at this little rectangular screen, and it's not the same as when you look at a book and you see the words on the page. And because I've now evoked it in my mind, I want to see Alexander underneath his beautiful quilt. I want to see with my own eyes the texture of that drawing. And maybe it comes back again to this sense of paying attention. So maybe there will be just a hunger for culture, but culture that isn't about glossing over lived experience. And this is what Alistair does so brilliantly. It's not saying everything is lovely and wonderful, it's saying everything is pretty awful and it's also wonderful.
This
hunger,
The truth and beauty, and beauty and truth in a way too. It just, when you picked that up there, it made me think too, we haven't really spoken about the object, but you obviously had said, from being used to the virtual experience of talking and engaging, obviously what a visual beautiful object Lanark is too. And you know, I love that, even the cover, using the sort of old techniques of almost creating a visual signifier and giving you little clues about what might happen, and allude to, which might happen to later in the text. But can you talk a bit about, you know, you obviously got to know Alistair's work through Lanark and that kind of connection between the visual and the literary, and what you thought about that?
I think that when I reflect on the way that Alistair works through the visual and the literary, I think both are languages, languages of observation. And I think that in a way, when he's writing against the failures of language. And when he's drawing against the failures of drawing. And maybe that's why, when I think of his work, I think about it as a total artistic practice, that Lanark is not enough. And the drawings are not enough. And together they create this evocation of perception. So I see him as really stretching things to their limits. And maybe working against them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he mentioned that, that idea of feeling when he went to art school about having to be categorized. You know, now I think it's acceptable that you can work between mediums and you don't need to be defined by one thing. But I think that was a struggle definitely for him. People couldn't understand why he wrote and painted and made murals. He had to be one thing or another, and to just say, well, I'm going to do all and not be restricted. I think there's something really, and it is all the work, isn't it? It all weaves and connects too. Have you got a favorite passage that you'd like to read or share with us today?
Well, you know, you mentioned in advance of this conversation that you were going to ask me that. And I'll tell you something that I did this morning. In fact, I did this for about 2 hours this morning. The way this book is you could just open it up anywhere. And there's something there. And it's just quite incredible.
Yep.
But I will say that, and I know that it's something that you've heard me say before, I just love the opening of Lanark. Because it takes you somewhere else. And he starts off by describing the elite cafe. And what's so interesting about the opening of this book is it doesn't give anything away where the narrator is. So is the narrator dreaming of going to the elite? Is the narrator the person who doesn't speak, who makes the coffee? Is the narrator the very skinny young man outside? Is the narrator one of the people who's laughing and joking? And in that first two pages, when Alistair describes the elite, he says there's all these different cliques. Which one would you join? Well, which one was Alistair part of? Would he be looking at them all? And what I love about that passage is it invites this freedom of difference of opinions. And it also reflects this sense of how do we decide who we want to become? So when I read that description of the elite, I want to go there, but I also know that it's a place for people who are maybe in their late teens, early 20s, when you're trying to work out who you are. And trying to work out who you are also means which clique do you sit with? Do you sit with the feminists? Do you sit with the socialists? Do you sit with the people who are complaining? Do you sit with the people who are laughing? It almost feels that it's an opening of a book that is inviting you, the reader, in, and it's your choice where you're going to be. And I think why I love this beginning of a book so much is it's ridden with generosity, and perhaps that's something that Alistair's writing and drawings and murals and humanness always persists as being an invitation to share and to choose.
Great, you've picked up on that. Absolutely, that generosity of spirit, that not just him, but the community around him, there was a real support. And you see it, right, even within Lanark, the list of plagiarisms, telling you where to go, what to learn. You know, nothing's made in a vacuum, is it? You have to, like, it's pointing to other artists, other writers. But yeah, that generosity of spirit, I think, comes across in the work, doesn't it? It's not someone telling you what you should feel or think. It's saying, you come with your lived life experience and bring it and negotiate this yourself. I think that's really powerful. That's a really powerful message, isn't it?
Completely, completely. And I think that's why Alistair's work, in all the ways that we've been talking about it, is something that endures. Mm-hmm. It will endure. And there's, it's got this inbuilt flexibility, chameleon-like quality, that means it can be read in so many different ways by so many different people and in so many different times.
Great, Lisa. Well, would you like to read the little passage for us now?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then maybe this is something else to say as well, is that, great writing, it encourages you to read it out loud. Mm-hmm. This is what's just so wonderful. So this is the very start of Lanark. The elite cafe was entered by a staircase from the foyer of a cinema. A landing two-thirds of the way up had a door into the cinema itself, but people going to the elite climbed farther and came to a large, dingy-looking room full of chairs and low coffee tables. The room seemed dingy, not because it was unclean, but because of the lighting. A crimson carpet covered the floor. The chairs were upholstered in scarlet. The low ceiling was patterned with walled pink plaster, but dim green wall lights turned these colors into varieties of brown and made the skin of the customers look grayish and dead. So for me, what does that mean when a book starts with that? And then, of course, you have to remember that before you've even got to that, you're seeing the frontispieces.
Yeah.
And you know that you're starting at book three. What is going on here? It's complete time travel. And even though I know if I go to the elite and my skin is going to look grayish and dead, and it is not going to be filthy, but it's going to seem filthy, I want to go there. And I want to imagine what it might be like. And I want to feel the specialness of climbing those stairs and knowing I'm going to the cinema where I will suspend my disbelief for 2 hours, 10 minutes. But I don't even have to go to the cinema. I need to just climb those stairs and look at the crimson and the green and the pink, and I'm in another world. And that's what he's inviting us to do. So maybe it's that sense that as we're talking, I'm suddenly thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if Alistair would have managed in his long enough life to have made a full on feature length film? What would that have looked like?
Absolutely. I don't know if we should pause it there or not, but I absolutely, I think it conjures up such a vivid world, doesn't it? That I think, well, I don't know if you ever saw, when you were around at Alistair's flat, he did draw a storyboard for a version of the film, which was amazing in itself. Just this idea of, because as you say, it's so visually rich, but it allows you space to create your, so my version of the elite is probably going to be a little bit different from yours and a little bit different from the next person's, but to see him distill it into a drawing I thought was really interesting, but maybe also difficult to do too, because it's so, as you're saying, it allows that space, doesn't it, for interpretation and for you to bring your real life experience to it. But yeah, absolutely, what a feature film that would be. Yeah. Oh, well, Lisa, it was fantastic to talk to you today. Thank you for sharing your brilliant perceptive insights into Lanark and for that beautiful reading at the end. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Zoya.
I've always felt that stories and pictures were a way of keeping people I knew alive, and as they were,